Yes, this is a telephone interview to Dr. Basilio Catania by several journalists convened at the Casa d'Italia of Montreal, Canada, on the occasion of the inauguration of the Antonio Meucci Center on October 19, 2002. Unfortunately, the voice of the journalist is barely audible due to bad telephone connection.
Well, I must say that before 1989, in other words, before I retired, I didn't care about Antonio Meucci at all, because I'm a telecommunication engineer. I retired as director of the research laboratory here in Turin of the telecommunication company, the most important telecommunication company here in Italy. And my specialty was fiber optics. I am quite known in the world about our achievement in the fiber optics field. And of course I have a number of friends at the Bell Telephone Laboratories. Okay, well, it happened that I was invited to give a lecture in Edinburgh, Scotland, about fiber optics. And in the airplane, I was reading a magazine in which I found mistaken information, and that is that Antonio Meucci was granted by the Supreme Court of the United States the priority in the invention of the telephone. I didn't know just nothing about Antonio Meucci, but you know, this information struck me a little, and when I came back to Torino, I asked my librarian of the research laboratory, we have a big library there, to give me some literature about Antonio Meucci for mere curiosity. Well, this guy brought to my desk about 10 pounds of paper of various kinds, books, articles, and so on. I said, "You're perfectly crazy. I never will read this stuff over there." And he said, "Well, I leave it on your desk and then you do whatever you want." Well, during the weekend, I perused this literature and I was completely, short-circuited, because I found opposite evaluation of Meucci's stature as a man and as a scientist. The half of the literature said Meucci is a charlatan. Half of the literature said Meucci is a genius. You know, this is a trick that you cannot play to a researcher. I am a researcher, you know. So whenever you are confronted with such strange and opposing statements, one very freely, very willingly, is bound to do some, to understand, because we hate not to understand things. So this is how it started up. About 3 months afterwards, I retired, and I had a lot of time to dedicate to this research. I said, "Well, let's see what I can do." And I went to Florence. I visited 5 or 6 archives in Florence, I went to Rome, and then I told to my chiefs in Rome, I said, "Listen, I have discovered some documents which are absolutely unknown, and those who have written about Meucci, they did not have those documents at hand. But to complete the research, I should like to go to Cuba, where Antonio Meucci lived 15 years, and to the United States, where Antonio Meucci lived 40 years, about 40 years. Well, they said, "Yes, let's go." And they gave me $10,000 just to spend in this enterprise. I went to Havana, Cuba. I stayed there 15 days, then to Washington National Archives, then Supreme Court. I went to New York National Archives, because there are National Archives in Bayonne, New York, and several other archives. I went to Staten Island, I visited the Garibaldi Museum, and then the Richmond Town Restoration, where is the Staten Island Historical Society. There is also the Richmond Count, County Clerk, because Meucci lost his house because of various trials which he lost. So in other words, I stayed about two months in New York to do this research. And then I came back to Italy with about 20 pounds of paper, which I just, you know, did not peruse. I just made photocopies, and that's all. This was 1990, so it's about 12 years ago. When I came back, I started perusing all this material, and I was still skeptic about Meucci. You know, I didn't like this man because he didn't write too much. He didn't publish in technical literature as other scientists had done. And I, as a researcher, as an engineer, was not happy of seeing his work just concealed so much and so on. But in 1994, it happened to me to read carefully what was the U.S. English translation of the laboratory notebook of Antonio Meucci. This translation was done by Michele Lemmi, a lawyer in New York, and friend of Meucci, of course, was countersigned before the notary public by Antonio Meucci, and bore all the drawings that Antonio Meucci made in his laboratory notebook that I never had seen anywhere else. And I saw a drawing where Antonio Meucci clearly and deeply illustrated what is known today the method of inductive loading of long-distance telephone lines. Well, frankly speaking, I was completely... I couldn't believe, you know, this was dated 1862. That's absolutely inconceivable, because the patents on inductive loading were taken by Pupin, a Yugoslav naturalized American, in about 1900. And these patents were taken by the Bell Company and applied on their lines starting from 1901. So it's about 39 years after Antonio Meucci illustrated the inductive loading of telephone lines in his laboratory notebook. Even if one can say, well, the memorandum book of Antonio Meucci is a forgery, this is what the Bell lawyers declared during the trial in which Meucci lost his case. Well, how could a laboratory notebook be a forgery if it contains inventions that were notarized in 1885, whereas the Bell Company did not even know what the inductive loading was before 1900? So, you know, this is the question which of which the answer is obvious, and which allowed me to say, now I am mathematically convinced that Antonio Meucci invented the telephone. But the story did not finish here. Of course, I published all this stuff, I presented it to the Academy of Lincei in Rome, later on I published in English and so on, but starting from this observation, I perused once more all the literature that I had brought to Turin from New York and Washington, to just discover if there were other inventions which were applied by Bell Telephone Company later than the date in which they were notarized, and I discovered other inventions. One was quoted by a journalist before, that is, that the environment must be quiet. You know, this must be a silly observation that anyhow Antonio Meucci put in his caveat very clearly. But it is a sign that Antonio Meucci really made the experiments, because who didn't make the experiment couldn't absolutely know that this was an absolute requirement for telephone communications, you know. So this was not quoted by Alexander Graham Bell in his patent. But, you know, Bell's patent is a magnificent lecture. If you read the Bell patent, you cannot but be admired of the style, of the clearness also, because he had the theory very clear in his mind, absolutely. This, whoever reads Bell's patent must admit that he had the theory very clear in his mind. But from passing from theory to reality, to construct the pieces, there is a big difference. We see in Italian tra il dire e il fare c'è di mezzo il mare, which means between saying and doing there is an ocean in the middle, you know. This is a proverb which is very true. But professors very often, some professors, not all of them, a few professors, I should say, they consider that engineering details can be left to technicians, to other people. This was not the case for the telephone. If you want to make a good telephone, you must clamp the diaphragm very tightly along its rim, first. Second, you must have a kind of regulation that optimizes the air gap between the magnetic pole and the diaphragm, and so on. The other thing is the quietness of the environment, and so on. But Meucci also discovered the anti-cyclotron circuit. The anti-cyclotron circuits were studied by George Campbell of Bell Laboratories in 1918. Do you know when Antonio Meucci discovered his anti-cyclotron circuit? 1858. Well, this is more or less the basis that should convince anyone who is an engineer, of course, because I understand, well, I don't blame Sheila Copps, for instance, for defending Alexander Graham Bell, because who knows about the results of the research that I have done? Nobody. Well, someone who has read my papers, of course, maybe. But it is too little. It will take perhaps 50 years before a vast number of scientists, of scholars, and afterwards of regular persons, you know, the people, the pupils in the school, and so on, will learn and be convinced of the priority of Antonio Meucci in the invention of the telephone. That's all. Yep.
Do you believe through all this that Bell in fact stole the invention from Meucci?
Could you repeat? I'm sorry.
Do you believe that Bell stole the invention?
I stole the invention. Oh my God. Well, you are making a question of $1 million. I have, let me state what I know and what I don't know. What I know is that a respected historian, Giovanni Schiavo, in 1958 published a very valuable book, I must say, titled Antonio Meucci, the Inventor of the Telephone. One of the chapters, if I remember well, is chapter 15 of the Schiavo's book, is entitled Who Stole Meucci Invention? Interrogative mark. So, he could have titled this chapter Bell Stole Meucci Invention. But he didn't say that. But in the content of this chapter, chapter 15, it is said that Antonio Meucci went to Western Union to show his prototypes and his description and caveats in 1872. And they remained there up to 1874, for 2 years. After 2 years, Mr. Grant, vice president of the American District Telegraph Company, which was not the Western Union, but was a delivery company which worked for Western Union, said, we have lost all your material. And if you read the New York Times of, I believe, 14 July 1874, which is exactly about the same time when Meucci was told that his material was lost. Well, in that issue of the New York Times, you can read the time when the telegraph operator can talk to each other along the telegraph wires is near. This phrase has been written in editorial which commented the quadruplex invented by Thomas Edison and the octuplex shown by Elisha Gray at about the same time, May of 1874. So, you know, in other words, despite what was told around that, you know, Mr. Orton, William Orton, the president of the Western Union, told Bell that he didn't want to buy the telephone because the telephone was a toy. You can see the same statement in the Scientific American, for instance, of the Times, that 1876, just 3 or 4 months after Alexander Graham Bell filed his patent. So, you know, one thing is what they said and one thing is what they did, because William Orton, in saying that the telephone was a toy, at the same time instructed Thomas Edison to study the telephone developed in 1861 by a German, Philip Rice, and to study the possibility of talking to telegraph wires. Now, there are suspicions, you know, there are suspicions that the Western Union, in some way or another, was acquainted with the work done by Antonio Meucci through his affiliate, so to say, that is the American District Telegraph Company where Meucci brought this. There is another thing which Giovanni Schiavo puts ahead, and they said superintendent of American District Telephone Company was Henry Pope, and this man was the brother of the famous Frank L. Pope, which was one of the most respected technicians of Western Union. And these two brothers, so it is reported in a book, you can read this Chiavo's book, they mysteriously took two telephones which it is not declared where they took them, and they tested along a line near their home in New Jersey. And this was, I believe, 1877, so 1 year after the famous Bell patent. So all this is another suspicious. And you can make a list of suspicions, which is perhaps composed of 10, 12 items. You know, are all circumstances which point to the direction that some information has reached the Western Union. Now, since Alexander Graham Bell and Elisha Gray and Thomas Edison were very frequently at Western Union laboratories, as Chiavo says, it is obvious that in one way or another they picked up some information about Newton. I must say, in defense of Alexander Graham Bell, that in reading the first 1.5 years that preceded his patent and his first successful test on his telephone, he had made so many mistakes that I hardly can think that he copied Antonio Meucci, because Antonio Meucci was far ahead of his times. But evidently, Bell could not pick up that information from Western Union. And I believe that the reason is that Western Union, if they had that information, they kept it for themselves, or for someone who keep it tight in order to make money some day or another. But these are only hypotheses. On the contrary, the famous document which I discovered in 1994 is not an hypothesis, is not a suspicion, is a 100% mathematical proof. And what I say is that I find it not useful to demonstrate that Alexander Graham Bell stole the invention of Antonio Meucci. We don't care about it, because we have demonstrated that Antonio Meucci was first. Now, why should we demonstrate that Alexander Graham Bell was a thief? I don't see the reason for that. Of course, I can make an investigation. I'm doing an investigation on this item. But before I will not discover a mathematical proof that Bell stole Meucci's invention, I will never discredit the memory of Alexander Graham Bell. See?
I will give the telephone number to Toronto, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They will call you directly for a few questions.
What you're saying is very interesting, but the quality of this audio is very bad.
I know. Now I hear you better. Before, I couldn't understand what you said.
Perfect. Sì.
La ringrazio, mi fa molto piacere. Sì, esatto. D'accordo.
E quindi io la ringrazio.
Ringrazio lei, molto gentile. Sono veramente contento. Guardi, io l'accoglienza che ho trovato in America, qui in Italia non me la sarei sognata nemmeno lontanamente, sebbene in fondo un aiuto mi è stato dato. Però non c'è quel calore, quell'entusiasmo che si riscontra negli italiani all'estero, è una cosa che mi commuove enormemente. Beh, però aveva casa, aveva una bellissima villa a Brantford, poi anche in un'altra cittadina vicina. Lui dice che le specifiche del telefono le ha scritte in Canada, poi mi pare che ci c'è addirittura un monumento, non c'è negli Stati Uniti, ma c'è in Canada, che è stato, mi pare, inaugurato nel 1910, 12, 15, cioè negli anni 1910. Quindi poi c'è anche da dire che la Bell Canada mi pare che faccia un lavoro molto egregio, e quindi c'è un insieme di ragioni per cui effettivamente una certa simpatia per Bell c'è. In fondo, guardi, io non disprezzo questo atteggiamento da parte loro, vorrei soltanto, e poi le dico anche un'altra cosa, che altro è parlare con dei politici o con dei giornalisti o con degli storici, altro è parlare con degli ingegneri.